everybody. Fantastic episode of The Morning Show. We're joined by Spencer of Spencer Ventures, and we discuss the NFT token airdrop season heating up. We talk about centralized exchanges beginning to list fractional NFT tokens. There is a great breakdown on that. And we talk about how to navigate the Solana meme coin landscape. We also talk a little bit actually about crypto equities at the end. Overall, it's a fantastic episode of the show. Hope you enjoy it. Catch you next time. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Friday, Jan 26th here. Last show of the week on the Nifty Podcast. We do this show Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time. Thank you so much for listening. Lots to talk about today. We are joined by Spencer of Spencer Ventures, the most successful NFT fund, at least in my eyes, to discuss the NFT token airdrop season heating up, centralized exchanges beginning to list fractional NFT tokens, and how to navigate the Solana meme coin landscape. Spencer, how you doing this morning, buddy?
I'm doing. Life is good. Bitcoin is back. Things are good. Life is awesome. Bags are pumping. The world is no longer ending. The sky is no longer falling. The leaves and the trees are beautiful, I think. I wouldn't know because I haven't gone outside in days.
Well, there you go.
I'm back, baby.
I mean, it's great to know that we're already back. It's amazing. We were dead, and then now we're back. Clemente, you got a Bodago of the Day to shout out, huh?
Yeah, this is a special one. Shout out to picksandstones.eth. So yesterday we were, Pio, we were discussing how to maximize point farming or diamond farming on Magic Eden, and Picks and Stones dropped a badass Twitter thread about exactly how to do it. Easy laid out how he's been doing it using AMMs, and Picks and Stones wrote up a beautiful thread step by step. We featured it in our newsletter. The upcoming newsletter of the year feature this thing. It's been getting some action on it. So thank you to Picks and Stones. You can follow them at 5StonesNFT on Twitter, and the thread is also pinned up top.
Absolutely love to hear it. Well, look, we got a lot to talk about today, so we're just going to get right into it. Signal, can you run with the weather report, please?
And do go. It's Friday, January the 26th. We've got that ETH market volume coming in at 24 million. Solana market volume coming in at 7 million. We have on the market leaders, Mockaverse, they're up 27% to 5 ETH. On-chain Monkey, they're up 33% to 1.75. And Ordinal MaxiBiz, that's already hitting 0.55 BTC. And Bitcoin Frogs are up 17.7 to 0.21 BTC. Over the past 24 hours, the biggest four stories. Well, firstly, nature is healing over in crypto as Bitcoin is up 3% to back over 41K. Ethereum is up 2%. Solana up 5% over $90 after being sub $80 for just 3 days. The AVAX Admirals token is also up 7%, and layer twos like Optimism and Arbitrum are also up 12% in the last 24 hours. At 10 a.m. Eastern, which will be managed by the Ovals team, and over 1 million wallets will be getting allocation as a stress test for the Jupiter launch pad. Over on Ethereum, Mockaverse has announced that their upcoming
So ahead of their upcoming Jupiter token launch, Jupiter will be launching a meme coin called WEN today at 10 a.m. Eastern, which will be managed by the Ovals team, and over 1 million wallets will be getting an allo, max allo, as a stress test for the Jupiter launch pad. And over on Mochaverse, Mochaverse has announced that their upcoming Mocha token has signed on as an inaugural launch partner to the Mocha Foundation, with the token's goal to power the largest on-chain cultural economies. Meanwhile, the Mochaverse NFT token is up 27% to 5.1. That's another all-time high for Mochaverse. And lastly, Pudgy Penguins tweeted a report of their season one Pudgy toys 7 months after their debut, which included selling over 750,000 toys in over 9 countries. They received, I think it was 6 awards on Walmart, Amazon. There were 55,000 plus accounts created on Pudgy World, which is their Club Penguin little metaverse that they're building out, and ended with Luca teasing season 2 of Pudgy Toys coming soon. That's the weather report. PO, back over to you.
Fantastic weather report. As usual, Clemente, some updates from the Daily Digest is posted to X platform every morning. It's pinned up top and it's emailed to anyone that subscribes at thenifty.com. First story, Memory Blocks, a 128 supply Ordinals art collection, sold out for 0.005 Bitcoin each and reached a high of, get this, a 10x, 0.05 Bitcoins before pulling back to 0.03 BTC. Next story, Grapecoin has launched a Grapecoin ETH deployment, which allows their token to be bridged from BNB chain to Ethereum. So interesting developments there with the Grapecoin token. Next story, On-Chain Monkey. This one is very, very interesting. On-Chain Monkey has announced an incoming snapshot on Bitcoin for a Karma token. I want to get Spencer's take on this, which will be dropped by a third party and Bitcoin On-Chain Monkey holders will be eligible for. So On-Chain Monkey started as an Ethereum project, and then they have the Teleburn that allows you to take the Ethereum project and turn it into a Bitcoin ordinal. Clemente has it pulled up just under 0.1 Bitcoins is the floor for the On-Chain Monkey ordinal project. Spencer, what do you think of this Karma token and this general ecosystem?
No take. I am learning about this Karma token in real time with all the other listeners in the Nifty portal this morning. I think, look, like, you guys, it's no secret in general, I'm bullish on tokens associated to NFT projects. I think in the early innings of this, which I believe we are still basically in, right? Like, you got to think the last big tokens were Grape, which hit a $300 million market cap, and Meme, which hit like a multi-billion-dollar market cap. Like, I think in the beginning stages of something that's so obvious is like tokens associated to NFTs, like everything cooks. I think we're rapidly approaching the point where like not everything will cook because so many things are coming out. But I still think there's a few legs left on like the everything will cook. And even when not everything cooks, still like many things will cook, right? And that's coming up.
Great take. Love to hear it. Would have thought that you'd have researched it, but I guess there's a lot going on in the ecosystem of Spencer Ventures, and you can't be an expert on every single thing. I mean, out of curiosity, when you looked into ordinals, was On-Chain Monkey something that was like on your list?
Of course. It's something I definitely looked into. Like, I think On-Chain Monkey is one of the early adopters of the ordinals protocol in terms of like ETH projects that and Solana projects that like adopted a new chain. The reason that I didn't look into it as much is, I guess, On-Chain Monkey stayed across multiple chains, if I'm correct. And I thought that that wouldn't be a strong enough narrative. It seems like that may have not been the case, right? Like, when I was exploring ordinals, I wasn't looking at projects that, like, maintained presence across multiple chains. I was looking for projects that either were Bitcoin native or were, like, really what I was looking for was ETH projects that were trying to bridge the entire thing. Like, mm-hmm. Like, and I think this is interesting, right? We've seen collections go multi-chain, you know, little pudgies are multi-chain via layer zero, but like that feels very different than like the bridge that DGods and Utes did, right? Like, that felt like a bridge. Like, we are making a concerted effort to push everyone from the original chain to a new chain. I've actually been really surprised that we haven't seen any ETH projects do a concerted full, like, hey, everybody bridge, not like we'll have an ETH community and we're going to do a Bitcoin thing. Literally ever, including DGods, who also did their, like, we have a Bitcoin thing, we have an ETH thing,
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I love hearing the way you think about this stuff. We'll have to see how it plays out for On-Chain Monkey and this Karma token. Next story, United States has filed a notice to sell $130 million worth of Silk Road seized Bitcoin. Saw one comment on this that was really interesting. Basically that someone thought it was interesting that when the United States just controls the actual fiat money supply, right? It's interesting that they would elect to sell a hard asset of Bitcoin. But obviously there's always a reason for this stuff. So who knows how it's going to go. Next story, Fred Krueger. So this is my new favorite Twitter analyst. Fred Krueger reported that ETFs own 1.5% of all gold, but ETFs already own 3% of all Bitcoin, which I found is very interesting. You got to follow this guy. This guy is a psycho when it comes to posting analysis. He is dropping a lot of analysis seemingly every day. He's verbally aggressive. Nick?
He's also potentially a murderer based on the pictures that I was looking at, which would be in line with his name, Freddy Krueger. He also posted a tweet explaining why he's tweeting so much. And the simple answer was he owns a lot of Bitcoin.
Well, there you go. But anyway, he has verbally agreed via DM to come on the Bitcoin show on Tuesday. Hasn't shared his email address yet, so we'll see if it actually happens. But great, great follow. That's at Dot Kruger. I definitely recommend giving him a follow. He's basically writing an investing and finance and macroeconomics blog on X platform. And it's not even like he's unknown. He's got 30,000 followers. So the guy is absolutely getting traction. Hope that he comes on the show. Either way, really, really enjoying reading everything that he's writing about Bitcoin and macroeconomics in general. Next story and last story, meme coin Honk. The meme coin that Nick bought is up 78% in the last 24 hours.
Honk. Since then, it's only up 36%. So since I've written this in the last 30 minutes, it has dumped a good amount.
It's a bullish pullback, dude. It went up to 25 cents and even higher for a period of time. Still not disclosing where we got this information, but let's just say a source close to the team gave us this alpha. Still just holding it. You're welcome to everybody on the show. Everyone was making fun of me. Everyone on the team was saying it was unprofessional for me to share this alpha. When else is it unprofessional when everybody else on this show shares an NFT that goes up in price? You know?
I wouldn't worry too much about it, Nick. Hope you're enjoying the Honk gains that you're getting. I hope you have an exit strategy. And it was great to hear the rallying cry of you just saying the word Honk emphatically.
The exit strategy is this bad boy is flipping Dogecoin. Okay, that's where we're heading with this.
Anyway,
I was on a Bunny's show last night for a bit. I was listening, and the amount of meme coin these guys are talking about, it is Solana meme coins are just different, man. It's these guys talking like they're bull case for why like Harambe is gonna 10x from here and why they have like way too much money in it. It was fun. It was fun.
Well, you know, like as much as you're like, like these guys are their meme coins, right? Like that's what everyone thinks about when they listen to us talk about NFTs. They're like, all right, cool story. Bro, like this snake-based NFT is going to be like generational wealth, right? Like it's the same amount of absurdity, right? It's just somebody else's absurdity. I find this sometimes when I'm listening to people talk about Solana meme coins, I'm like, man, this sounds dumb. And then I realize this must be what I sound like to everyone else.
Well, Spencer, I feel like you're putting the NFT space on your back when it comes to perception because you're having intelligent conversations with high net worth individuals and presenting theses that are playing out in real time when it comes to NFT. So you're doing the good work of, kind of making the NFT space a bit more legitimate. Look, let's lead with fractionalized NFT centralized exchanges. So we've already kind of talked about this with Spencer a tiny bit, but I think it's better to do a little bit of a deep dive here. This week, Flooring Protocol and Protectorate announced a partnership with the centralized exchange Woo, W-O-O, to allow centralized exchange trading of fractional Pudgy Penguins and Bored Ape Yacht Club tokens. So, Spencer, you have said to me privately that you think that the Flooring Protocol token structure is like a work of art or that it was one of the strongest designs. Let's kind of talk about this. And so, I also want to understand, let's say I do want to dollar cost average into Pudgy Penguins. I would love to understand why this is a good way for me to do it and sort of the pros and cons of it. I'd love to kind of dig into this a little bit.
Yeah, well, so like the concept of listing the micro tokens on centralized exchanges is very interesting, right? Like one of the big theses we've had in NFTs for a while has been like, NFTs do coin airdrops. Why do the coin airdrops associated to NFTs do so well? Because these custodial exchanges have a lot more liquidity in aggregate than the on-chain kind of ecosystem does, right? Like there's just more liquidity on Coinbase and Binance and KuCoin and OKX and all and Bybit and all these big exchanges than there is in like just like NFT trading, right? And so pool of bigger liquidity, you get higher market caps and pool of smaller liquidity. Well, one way to get NFTs there rather than them doing a native token is to fractionalize them and list the token, right? And there's a lot of potential. Now, one of the other big things that I think is important here is there's a lot of firms that are market makers in space. And what they do is they market make exchanges to decentralized order books, right? And so every market maker worth their salt knows how to market make a centralized exchange to a Uniswap pool. This is like one of the core things that you do professionally in that job. Now you can do that with NFTs. Now you can do that from the Uniswap pool, literally, like at Florium Labs. If you haven't used it, the website is just an interface for Uniswap pools, right? That's mostly what it is. And so you are literally LPing ETH, you know, well, actually, it's FLC micro token, right? And this is important to talk about. One of the big, what Pio is alluding to about like the elegance of the design of Florium Lab token is originally it was, okay, you have micro Pudgy Penguin, micro BAYC to ETH, right? That was originally what was incentivized on the platform. As of a few weeks ago, now they incentivize micro Pudgy Penguin to FLC and then a separate pool that's FLC to ETH. So if you want to go Pudgy Penguin to ETH, you actually go through the order book of FLC, right? And so all of the FLC to ETH pool gets all of this volume. When they first launched this, FLC was actually number 6 on Uniswap for transactions entirely, right?
Wow.
And if you look, you know, I think I was explaining this last time, like when, for example, Wasabi, the options the perpetual swap protocol settles like their long and shorts, they sell and buy like micro Pudgy Penguin, micro BAYC through FLC through this route. Like this is how they do it, right? And yeah. So in the same way, as you listed on these centralized exchanges, the people market making centralized exchanges to Florium Labs are market making like through the FLC pool, essentially, right? And so, you know, how much is this started today? How big is the flows on Woo? Like, it's probably not that large. It's probably not the biggest deal, right? But like, but the precedent that's set is what's important, right? Like, yeah. If you think Woo is going to be the last exchange to list Florium Lab micro tokens, I think you're out to lunch.
Right. Okay. Well, let's break this down a little bit. I want to simplify it for everybody. So first off, let me lead with, I've wanted a trusted and consistent and long-term system for fractionalized exposure to NFTs for a long time. For example, I think a CryptoPunk is, how much is a CryptoPunk? Like 150 grand, 175
G's, yeah.
150 G's. So not everybody can just take 150 grand and plow it into a single NFT, right? That's like a tough thing to do. For me to do that right now, I'd have to liquidate like all my Solana, like, you know, wouldn't be a great thing for me to do. But if I could every week buy $300 worth of a token that's actually trusted, that represents fractional ownership of a CryptoPunk. So as CryptoPunks appreciate in value, this token does. And just like if I go on the Robinhood app, I can buy fractional shares of Tesla stock or something like that. That's a very cool thing. So when you're talking about the elegance of the FLC token structure, it sounds like, and keep in mind, I'm not an expert on tokens, so correct me if I'm wrong, and I'd love to be wrong in this just so I can get a deeper understanding. You're saying that the reason that the current setup is really good is because, number one, you're getting the market maker liquidity of fungible tokens that would otherwise not be available to the NFT space, because market making in the NFT space is just flat out not as big of an industry. In fact, it's a tiny industry compared to market making for fungible tokens. And the way that the FLC token is structured, it basically not incentivizes, but requires volume to go to the FLC token through this process itself from the market makers. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Well, and there's one more thing which I didn't mention here, which is that like, because there's incentives, and like if you go to the liquidity tab at the top, right, like you can see there's really significant incentives on these pools that are like FLC to ETH pools, right? And so there have been historically, right? And so one of the things that has happened is if you have FLC to like micro BAYC, right, then effectively the micro BAYC, the micro Pudgy Penguin, all of these like LP positions actually support the price of the FLC token, right? Because they're all simultaneously a bid on FLC, right?
Yeah.
And so you have all of this liquidity across them doing real good.
Very interesting.
It looks like it's, yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, it seems like something's not displaying right on Clemente's play, because the TVL is certainly not zero on all those pools.
Yeah, good question on, so you talked about pudgies and you talked about apes. What characteristics would the underlying NFT collection have to have for this to, for like, for someone to want to do this?
Yeah. So one of the biggest things that I'm guessing, and this is pure postulation, right? But I think that, like, for the centralized exchanges to want to list it, they need certain amounts of volume and certain amounts of TVL on Uniswap pools, right? Like, you don't want to list a token with X amount. I think the Bored Ape Yacht Club pool on Uniswap for micro tokens had like $5 to $7 million in liquidity in it, which is pretty substantial, and was doing like large amounts of order flows through it. I think you'll also see too, like, some other exchanges that like have interest in listing specific collections. I think it makes sense that they start with the big capped ones, right? Like, there are smaller collections, there's sub half an ETH collections on Flooring Labs, but if you're going to test the waters for the thing that you know that like normies have demand for, which is like normies know what Bored Ape Yacht Club is, right? And I think the more CEX you get, the more it's like, okay, is this for a different audience that isn't like, oh my God, Bitcoin puppets, like we're mogging so hard. I don't know. Like, it's just, that's not the audience in the same way in exchanges.
Spencer, I'm looking at, I want to get what's your take on Flooring Protocol, the actual token, the FLC token. I see it has a market cap of $435 million versus, like, I look at it similar to a Blur play where you're just buying, is it kind of buying it to get exposure to just the overall NFT ecosystem? How are you looking at the actual FLC token?
Yeah, I mean, disclosure, I hold a lot of this FLC token. Like, I think it's really good. I think if you're seeing the micro tokens get listed on exchanges, like, you have to think that, like, the token itself could get listed on exchange, right? Like, we're looking at this is one of the highest market capped tokens I've seen in a very long time that isn't listed on any exchanges, right? Mm-hmm. You can see there's this giant peak. It hit a market cap of almost 850 million. So it almost unicorned without an exchange. One of the things too is, again, like, a lot of like the team behind Flooring Labs are like nerds of the best caliber, right? Like, mm-hmm. like this is a very like CTO driven company. And so I think like a lot of the elegance in the design is appreciated by the exchanges. And so like they have a lot of liquidity, they have a lot of volume. They've certainly made mistakes. Like, we've seen an exploit, right? Big price impact off the exploit. We saw
pretty normal in crypto, though, right? I mean, yeah, like, I mean, you hate to see it, but pretty normal.
Look, you know, it happens. I think they reimbursed everybody. People have largely moved on from that, but it's worth mentioning, right? They've had an exploit. They were having bot farming issues. Like, stuff happens, right? But at the end of the day, if you look at the ecosystems in NFTs, you have like Blur obviously being a market leader in their ecosystem. You have Magic Eden really doing a big push, and you have Flooring Protocol. And I think that, like, it's not which one of those wins. It's like all of those are tied that lift each other. And if you look at where Flooring Protocol is right now, I think it's definitely the more volatile one, right? Like, this is the one that, like, could, you know, we're sitting here saying like it has a $400 million market cap without being on an exchange. You could say, wow, that's overpriced. It's going to go down. It's a reasonable take, right? You could also say, hey, what happens when it gets exchange listed? It is a shinier new coin. It has a lot of volume. It has a lot of TVL, right? Like, you know, look, it's not unreasonable to think it can have a Blur-like outcome.
Is Blur exchange listed?
Yeah, Blur is exchange listed was exchange listed on Coinbase. It is now exchange listed on Binance.
What happened to the Coinbase listing?
I think when they listed on Binance, I think it is no longer tradable on Coinbase.
Got it. Okay.
So I don't know how that deal went down behind the scenes.
So I have a question about, you know, like, to a retail investor, so to speak. Like, let's say I want to buy fractional exposure to Pudgy Penguins, right? Yes. Or can you only do big Pudgies, or can you do little Pudgies too?
Big or little.
Big or little. Okay, so perfect. Little Pudgy's example. I think the floor is just under 2 ETH on a little Pudgy. So not cheap anymore. It's like almost $5,000 or maybe above $5,000, right? But let's say I have $5,000 and I can either buy a little pudgy or I want to like diversify, right? And if I diversify, I want to like DCA into the micro pudgy, the micro little pudgy token on Flooring Protocol. What are the pros and cons? So like if I have the 5K, does it just make more sense to buy the asset straight up? Or like what is the kind of downside of the FLC, the Flooring Protocol version of it? And yeah, let's just talk about that a little.
Yeah. So pros and cons, right? The downside is you're going to miss airdrops, right? So like, like the big downside was the Dimension airdrop. If you had fractionalized big pudgy, for example.
Yeah. Don't remind me.
Doesn't get any of it. Right. But the upside is there's other interesting things you can do with micro tokens, right? The two main ones are there's an earn tab on Flooring Protocol where you can stake the micro tokens. Mm-hmm. And so when people do a lot of redemptions out of the FLC vaults, sometimes it generates like yield for the staked tokens. And so if you scroll down, like micro Pudgy Penguin is yielding like 15, 16%, and Pudgy Penguins are yielding 31% APR in like Pudgy Penguin token in Pudgy Penguin token. And like, if you have a disgustingly large amount of Pudgy Penguin token, for example, like I have yielded more than a Pudgy Penguin staking on FLC earn.
Like, so, and real quick, so you own, everybody knows, I think that you, in your funds or your fund, I should say, you have a ton of Pudgy Penguins. I think everybody knows that, right? You bought them from Sotheby's from Three Arrows Capital, but you still elected to buy the fractional Pudgy Penguin token, even though obviously you have the liquidity to buy more, big Pudgy Penguins?
Yeah, yeah. We have like well over $1 million of fractional Pudgy Penguin tokens, right? And like staking those in earn has earned 31% APR in token in itself. And so we missed out on the Dimension airdrop for the ones that were fractionalized. But again, like we've earned over an additional big Pudgy.
Yeah. It's no joke.
Of token. And it's not a small number, right? And you know, the other place that you can look for yield on stuff like that is liquidity providing on Wasabi as well, right? So there are, or even like at the incentivized FLC to Pudgy Penguin pool, that is more of a trade that's not just straight like one-sided yield, right? So that's a more complicated thing to do. But like there is interesting stuff to do with your fractional tokens. So if you want to go do cool, interesting stuff in DeFi, and that is more important to you than airdrops or like Discord access or stuff like that, then I think fractional tokens make a lot of sense. If you are someone who is like, no, like I really want to, you know, get token verified in the Discord, I want to make sure I get all the airdrops, like it's one of the more interesting trade-offs right now. There's also been, you know, moments where the micro tokens can depeg, right? Like that's something that can happen. So, you know, Something to definitely pay attention to.
Okay, and then last question on this. The price relationship between the micro Pudgy token and the actual Pudgy Penguins.
Yeah.
There's, you know, in TradFi, for example, if you've ever gotten into precious metals or you know, other commodities like gold and silver, for example, right? There's actually not a linear relationship between the price of the, like the hard asset gold or the hard asset silver and the ETF price, because there's layers of issues. We could talk about this all day. I'd love to talk about it with Fred Krueger, for example. Obviously, there's not TradFi. This is crypto, and stuff's on chain. And there, you know, I'd imagine there's a more direct connection. But is that like, is that price relationship on point? In other words, right now, I think a big Pudgy is like 18 ETH. Let's say tomorrow it crashes to 12 ETH or it goes up to 26 ETH. Is that going to be a one-for-one linear like relationship with the micro token price?
Yeah. So they're like more or less pegged across most collections. Ironically, if you go to Flooring Lab, you can tell the degree to which there is a correlation has everything to do with the reserve ratio, right? So it's how many are not in safe boxes. Ironically, like Pudgy Penguins, big Pudgies is the most reserve ratio, like is the most like number that are in safe boxes. So the reserve ratio is 25% on big Pudgies. But the degree to which they are at risk of depegging is basically a one-to-one function of the reserve ratio, right? And the worst depeg we've seen is about half an ETH on Pudgy Penguins, to my knowledge, right? And it gets repegged relatively quick. There was also, actually also on Big Pudgies, a day where there was someone messed up making their bot that was farming FLC, and it sent the price of Micro Pudgy Penguin from like you know, 3x above the price it was supposed to be. So like there are times when it decorrelates, but it's actually been surprisingly well correlated, right? And this has everything to do with like the micro token pools can never bid above a fractional NFT, because then you can just buy the fractional NFT on Blur, fractionalize it and sell it into the pool. It actually used to be like very profitable to just do that sometimes, right? I think there's been a lot more bots created doing it now, and I think a lot of the edge is gone, but you used to just be able to like buy on Blur and like dump it into Flooring Lab pools and like make a spread. That's less and less true. So it's only ever that it can depeg down, basically, because it's much easier to repeg up. And it really can only depeg down if there's not enough liquidity to buy a full unit, right? So like if there's not enough liquidity in the pools, or if the reserve ratio gets below like 20%, that's when it can also depeg, right? And again, like there's just enough economic incentive here that like I think it's not a zero risk. It's something that you should understand. If you're using Flooring Labs, if you're DCAing into micro tokens, take some time and understand literally what they are and what they do, right? They are in general a pretty good proxy for one, like each micro token is one millionth of an NFT. However, there's like a bunch of asterisks there in that, like, just get what it actually is. It's the right to go in and claim under certain circumstances.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I, like I mentioned, I've been waiting for a kind of above board and consistent way to be able to do this. It seems like out of all the candidates that we've seen in the NFT space, this has the strongest footing, the most legit backing. And I don't know, it's got a lot of momentum right now. Nick's got his hand raised. Oh, go ahead, Sig.
Yes, no, sorry, Spencer. I wanted to ask, like, as the market evolves on the NFT FI side, and it, you know, there's lots of products and services out there, would you say this is the most efficient way to long and short NFT collections at the moment?
Sorry, this being
like what we're talking about here, using FLC and, you know, against Pudgies or against Apes or whichever underlying collection it is, because there's lots of ways to be able to take a position on NFT collections now without actually having to own the underlying asset. I'm just thinking from your perspective, would you say this is the most efficient way, like the most efficient product out there if somebody wants to long or short a collection?
Yeah, well, I think in many ways this is the case, right? Like, especially if you don't want to long or short, if you want to short, Wasabi is the way to do it that still uses this, right? If you want a long, like, I think this makes a lot of sense. And I think the yield on the earn product within Flooring Labs is like incredibly attractive, right? Like, that is the biggest argument for why you might want a long like this versus underlying. I still think in my heart of hearts, in my like, why are we in NFTs? Like, if you want a long one unit and you like, you may just want to buy the thing, right? Like, A, you know, it's more of the experience that like NFTs are geared towards. But like, it's crazy to me that that's not obvious. That like that one of the elegance of Flooring Lab is the ability to create a derivative that may actually be more attractive than owning the actual thing, right? Because of what you can do in these various things.
Why is this software? So when you compare, we had a lot of attempts at fractionalization before fractional.art, and then there were like a bunch of other tools. Why is this working where those failed? And secondarily, what, like, fractionalized NFTs are like definitively like securities. How does this, like, how are they navigating this part of that and like avoiding sort of the regulatory side of it, which has been kind of the most obvious headwind for this? Or maybe you could say that it's not because it's based offshore or something like that. But I'm just wondering how they're navigating that side of things.
Yeah, so I mean, like, this is an Asia-based team. I'm not going to comment on their regulatory stance, right? Like, that's not. But there, this is not a US-based team. And secondly, like, you're right. Like, the NFTX, for example, like is the way earlier attempt at this. The challenge with NFTX was always like their tokens depegged all the time because there wasn't enough liquidity, right? Like, there was like four Pudgy Penguins in NFTX, and you couldn't get to one full Pudgy Penguin token to redeem because there wasn't enough circulating, right? Like, it literally is impossible to buy the full Pudgy. Call a spade a spade. Why does Flooring Lab work? Flooring Lab works because the founder of Flooring Lab seeded the platform with $40 million of liquidity, right? Like, you guys have seen PIM Capital operate. You've seen him operate. Like, the liquidity pools include, like this is his platform. He put, like, 200 Pudgy Penguins into Flooring Labs when to launch it. He put, like, 200 BYC into Flooring Labs to launch it. He put, like, 200 Azuki into Flooring Labs to launch it. Like, he solved the cold start empty room problem with just a pile of money. And that's what no one else was able to do. And it was not a small pile of money. It was a very, very substantial. Like, I remember the tweet threads back when he was buying the NFTs for Flooring Labs. It was like, you know, he's holding it on his back. He was literally like 10 to 50% of the volume in a given day was just him buying NFTs for this platform.
Where has that evolved to, like, in terms of his percentage of activity?
None. Ever since he's launched this protocol. Like, he bought those NFTs to launch this protocol, right? I think, as you've seen it, he recently bought, so, like, Flooring Lab just launched their Punks token, which is Micro C721, and he just bought a bunch of Punks and wrapped them. Like, I don't know if you guys saw, but he was, I think, one of the first people to use the bulk wrapping function on the new wrap-unwrap smart contract from Yuga Labs, and he wrapped, I want to say it's, like, 20 Punks or something. Maybe it's more, maybe it's less, but, like, pretty crazy amount of Punks to have wrapped.
One last thing on this. So this guy has, I'm assuming as a result of this, a significant portion of the tokens. Do you know, like, what percentage of the tokens of FLC he now holds? Is this basically a way of the underlying token, which has gone up significantly, although I don't know how it's gone up relative to, like, Pudgy, for example, which is, in the same period of time, maybe gone up more than FLC has. But is this just an opportunity for him to get expanded liquidity, essentially, of this? Because he put in 40 million. The underlying token value is 400 million. So that's a 10x in terms of market cap if he were to own 100% of it. I don't know how he fits into that, but is there inherent risk with that?
I mean, I think, like, the team currently still owns a lot of the token. Like, the distribution strategy for this token has been really interesting, right? That being said, I don't know if I see it as systemic risk, right? It's not necessarily, like, unlocked tokens in a wallet they're just going to dump on the market. Like, realistically, it's more of incentive alignment, right? Like, it seems like the end game is the FLC token for that team, much more so than it is the NFTs they hold, right? NFTs they hold are enablement of it. And as much as you may think, oh, the market cap is $400 million, they spent $40 million in NFTs, it's a 10x. It's nothing like that, right? Like, there's no way you could sell. Let's say they own, like, you know, so they hold, like, 60, 70% of the supply, right? Like, you couldn't sell 60, 70% of a token for anywhere near that amount of money, right? As soon as you started selling any of it, like, there's only, like, $4 million of liquidity, $5 million of liquidity in the pools to sell it into, right? Like, Like you need this to be $1 billion to $4 billion to realize, like, $100 million off of it, regardless of how much you own, yeah. Right? Like, I think this is a mistake that people make a lot of the time about thinking about team ownership of token is like there's a very low limit to how much you could effectively sell as a team if you wanted to, like, dump your own token, right?
Yeah, there is some limited upside if you're also the 90% of the liquidity pool you're dumping on yourself. So there's not a ton of upside of that situation. Eventually, the goal with all these things is to dump on other people. That's all of our dreams, right? Is that enough fools jump into my honk token so I can dump on those idiots, basically, is the no. Yeah, I think it is still interesting, though, and trying to understand there is some incentive and some dynamic around, you know, tokenizing your assets and figuring out some sort of process, because there's also, like, there's some downside, essentially, when you own the majority of, like, NFTs, for example, that are more that, like, your time to exit the market is going to be, you know, like, an extended period of time, then obviously fractionalizing it is one path to acquiring some of that liquidity. I don't know what the effectiveness of that is. Flooring Protocol is going to end up determining this, and there's a long way to go on that path. But I was just curious why they succeeded and what sort of risk there is if, like, they own a bunch of them that they're, that, like...
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You even saw them like giving out and giving out like tens of millions of dollars worth of like the native token of the FLC token as incentives for the liquidity pools when they transitioned from the ETH to micro token pools, the FLC to micro token pools. So like a lot of the what is like still retained by the team is like used as incentives for people using the platform. And is given away more so than like systemic risk of the team that holds it.
Signal, you have a question for Spencer? Yeah.
Spencer, I got a question because I know you love to invest in a good team, and you often talk about like Pac-Man's background. We're all aware of like his pedigree. What is the pedigree of this team, the flooring team, and why you like them?
Yeah, so I don't know how doxed it is for them, but I'll say this is like, this is, if you look at it, this token, you're like, wow, this is an elegantly designed token, because this is a team that has interacted with a lot of tokens in the last like many years. This is a very crypto native team that's been operating, actively trading in the crypto space for like quite a while, right? Like this is, and I think I hinted at this too, like this is a tech led team, right? This is not a business development led team. And I think you see that in a lot of what I think of as like the nerdy components of FLC, right? Like the fact that the micro tokens are mu, like they put a Greek letter at the start of their tokens. Why? Well, because, you know, mu is 1/1,000,000th, right? And so therefore you go, but like it's Greek letter, right? And you would never have a BD led team start like that.
Genius.
I'll say nerdy. I'm not going to say genius. Yeah. When mu Bodagos? That's what I want to know.
Well, that's what we want to know too.
If it's dude, we've been waiting for the muse, man, and other sort of Greek letters. I'm just waiting on every Greek letter to end up in front of the dog token. You know,
yeah. You know what? What I'm really waiting for, I don't want mu BAYC. I want mu 2 BAYC. I want you to hook that shit up, put it in, then have an epic fight scene in an early 2000s cartoon about fighting animals. You know, we're gonna just cook here.
And we release that on Netflix, and then maybe the Bored Apes will go up by 5% or something like that, and Bunny can...
Bullish.
I love it. Well, look, moving on. Great discussion on FLC and flooring protocol. So Sotheby's has a round of auctions coming up. Spencer, you always talk about you want to pay attention to what Sotheby's is dealing, I suppose. These are more assets from the Three Arrows Capital collection. You cleaned out the Three Arrows collection of Pudgy Penguins. Now it seems like we have some X Copy. We have Alpha Centauri Kid. We got Beeple. We got Grant Yun. What is your take? Well, there's a lot more stuff. Some Dimitri Cherniak, Tyler Hobbs.
Watching this shit.
Sailor Moon. Wow, look at that. So actually, like an interesting thing here is that the collection which I bought from and the last one which was for auction is the Starry Night Capital, which had one LP, which was Three Arrows Capital. My understanding is that, oh, this may also be Starry Night. There's some stuff there.
Starry Night Capital is Vincent Van Doe, right?
Well, so Starry Night Capital was Vincent Van Doe, but the money in Starry Night Capital was from 3AC.
Got it.
Right. So there are some things that are like Starry Night, and there's some things that are 3AC. Look, Vincent Van Doe did a banger job. Like that's the thing to know, right? And that's, and you know, you see what's getting auctioned and why. And I think they've done a pretty good job attracting liquidity. We saw record sales in the last auction. I think we'll see some good sales again, right? Like there's a bunch of people who want to go. They see Sotheby's as tastemakers. They've hopped on the Ordinals train, I think, pretty aggressively, right? I think that was a smart move. We saw people get really rewarded for hopping on the Ordinals train, just like OKX did. Like if you look at the exchange wars, like OKX listed BRC20 really quickly and won a huge amount of market share they didn't previously have because of making that decision, right? So being first to market in the Bitcoin ecosystem has just historically proven to be a really smart decision if you're a major institution like Sotheby's is.
Very interesting. Will you be placing any bids?
Probably. I don't know. I'm looking at it. We'll see. I didn't win any at the art part last time, but I did get a nice picture of me on telling us all the NFTs were over, so that was fun. So we
you and Redbeard.
Yeah, me and Redbeard.
Well, anyway, moving on from Sotheby's, very interesting stuff. Upcoming Solana token airdrops. So we got some Clemente was talking about the meme coins on Solana. I know Bunny has been talking about these on his show. Spencer, are you participating in the Solana Marketplace point farming game? I know that you historically have farmed points and farmed tokens on different platforms. I know you also have a position of if you can get free money, you should probably take it no matter what your stack looks like. How are you playing this?
Regrettably, I don't have a super active points farming strategy on these Solana marketplaces. And that is not something you should listen to and be like, ah, oh, I guess I shouldn't do it. That is something that I just like. I've been putting a lot more thought recently into how to farm Blur again than I have into Solana. And this is, and like, I am sure I'm missing out on gen wealth by doing that, right? Like, you just have to put your development resources for automation. You have to put your like thought processes resources to work in specific ways. And I actually had a call last night with some of my team members that was like, we totally should have been paying more attention to this. So I think it's something you should definitely be paying attention to. It's not something that I'm paying enough attention to, quite candidly, to talk intelligently on. But yeah, like I'm the boomer who's not engaged in the right way with that part of the ecosystem. And I'll fully admit that.
Nick, was there something you wanted to add there? Or?
No, I just thought it was hilarious and being like, I definitely have felt the why the fuck did we miss this sort of vibe. Yeah. Before and just getting pissed off and being like, how do we miss this fucking thing? but I don't have anything to add. I was just laughing at that. Dude, we got this like wave of shitcoiners just bouncing in our comments right now.
I will say, like, with all this stuff, right? Like, you want to be very careful about how you allocate your time. Because we're and like over the last like 12 to 18 months, like there's been one airdrop you can farm per unit of time that's like clearly the one to be doing. Right now, there's a lot of stuff going on. And not all of these are gonna be created equal, right? Like, and it's usually much better to focus on the one that you understand how to farm the best, that you think has the highest upside, and like do that. And like trying to get a little bit of everything is almost always a losing strategy because you're not gonna stay on top of it in the way you need to, right? Like, that's just the fact of the matter.
Spencer, are you going to, we have the WEN kind of mock meme coin launching today from Jupiter. That's on Solana, getting a lot of attention, as you can see on the comments. We have the Jupiter airdrop happening next week. Are you participating in possibly buying that token after launch, given that we might see a little dump? Are you playing that at all?
Not really. I mean, like, I'm just not in the business of buying tokens, right? Like, there's some reasonable cap where if it launches, I'm like, this is stupidly low.
Got it.
Like, I might swap some of my Miro over to, like, just Jupiter. Like, you know, the ultimate trade is, if something that feels really good about, like, trading a coin on an exchange, watching the coin go up, selling the coin, then buying the exchange, it just feels like something, like a glitch that you're not supposed to be able to do, right? Like, you put $5,000 or something, it goes to $20,000. You swap it to, like, the thing that you $15,000 of the thing you bought and you just have free ownership of the exchange in addition to the airdrop. Like, it's like a build your own airdrop, but you need to have traded well.
Well, anyway, moving on to NFT lending. And so I want to get your take on this. Will you be participating on any sort of like leverage based trading in the NFT space, Spencer? A lot of people just said if there's going to be leverage in NFTs, if there's going to be options or you're able to trade NFTs with margin, everybody's going to short every NFT. Like, that's kind of like what people have said. But then you start to think about, well, what if an NFT, you know, got short squeezed, right? So how are you thinking about this? Is this something that you'd go anywhere near, that you'd participate in? Do you think it's going to end poorly? Like, I'd love to know how you're thinking. Yeah, go ahead.
We provide a lot of liquidity on these like perps platforms. So like, I more so than like trading on them, I think. The perp stuff, specifically shorting, is really interesting to be able to hedge, right? The funding rates for the hedge effectively right now are still like not the cheapest in terms of like holding a long-term institutional style hedge. I think you could argue like one thing, you know, is like, I don't think there will be short squeezes, right? And I don't think because of like, you have to understand literally how do these perpetual swap protocols work. And there's basically two ways, right? A lot of them are synthetic perps. We saw this with like NFT perp.xyz was like the main one, right? Synthetic perps use funding rates to keep their peg. Issue that happened with NFT perp was the funding rates weren't strong enough to keep the peg, because you basically need someone taking a long whenever someone takes a short, right? Wasabi is covered perps, which use like actually like when you 5x long, it actually goes and buys 5 ETH worth of the thing, right? And when you close that position, it sells it into the market, right? That has a reliance on the micro tokens and the FLC pools, but like is more stable. But like this is a really like evolving thing that's happening, right? But neither of those is what you think of in traditional markets, where like there's a contractual obligation to go buy from the market a net new asset, right? And that's a short squeeze comes from when there's shorts, there's a contractual obligation to go buy. Well, on the internet, we don't have like contracts that can be enforced in the way that you can historically. And so like in TradFi, which is why perps are just a completely different thing than like options are in TradFi, right? And so the idea of a short squeeze isn't really, I think, something that makes sense. But what is more reasonable is like someone does, you know, an Elliott management style thing. Are you familiar with Elliott management? I'll share. So Elliott management is one of the most famous and it is the most feared hedge fund on the block. Elliott management is famous for going on these crazy activist investor quests to just destroy companies. They'll just take like huge short positions, go get a board seat on the company and just wreck it, right? It's like how they work. Very famously, Elliott Management owned like an Argentinian warship. So they bought Argentina was defaulting on its debt, and they bought like pennies on the dollar debt from Argentina. And they waited for their single warship and their entire fleet to dock in like some African country. And they boarded it with machine guns, the hedge fund did, and took over the warship and repossessed it as the collateral for the debt. And then like gave the debt back, right? These like crazy things, right? But like
they were pirates.
They're literally pirates, right? Do whatever it takes. And so this is like the most feared hedge fund, right? And so like what they'll do is they'll go and they'll take giant short positions on companies and just like destroy the company, right? And so the fear is that having a robust short market would allow someone to do that, right? Like someone goes, takes a giant short position on, you know, Doodles or Moonbirds or something, and then writes some big FUD thread that gets a lot of engagement, whether it's true or not, right? That's the fear of like what the bad outcome is in these scenarios, is like there's an incentive for people to like imagine if like Ryder Rips or like Polly could have shorted BAYC before suing them for racism stuff, right? There's a lot more incentive for someone to be a negative, to be a little bit less WAGME, right? Like in the past, the WAGME cabal situation came from you could only make money in NFTs if NFTs went up. But what if we now have the like NAGME, you're not going to make it cabal, that tries to short them and make them go down, right? Like this is the big concern about having shorts in the market. But like really the flip side of that is like being able to hedge lets market making and other stuff like work, right? Like one of the reasons that market making doesn't work in NFTs is because if someone in traditional market making, if someone dumps a big spot position into you, you just buy puts versus selling, because that allows you to like be delta neutral on a big spot position, right? Here, NFTs can't do that. So if someone dumps a big spot position, the only way to remove your risk from your portfolio is to sell it, right? And so that now if you have like a bunch of BAYC got dumped into you because you're farming blur points, you could short BAYC instead of like doing the opposite.
I mean, look, it's juicy stuff, and it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. Clemente, do you have a question about a token for Spencer?
Yeah, this is a little bit not specifically related to what we're talking about, but we've been talking NFT tokens, Spencer. I want to talk about Mochaverse because this thing ripped again to a new all-time high after they keep kind of leaking details and have seemingly ramped up their marketing for their Mocha coin. Mochaverse hit an all-time high of 5.2 ETH yesterday. Its current market cap is roughly $100 million for that Mochaverse NFT collection. I'm curious how you're navigating or trying to value what whether or not Mochaverse could be a potential good buy right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, like I think that the big question around Mochaverse, right? And like, I think if you look at what do you think the market cap of the token will be, right? Like Grape was a Animoca Brands investment portfolio company, right? At 300 mil. Mochaverse is an Animoca brand subsidiary. This is a very important and subtle difference, right? Like this is a wholly owned by Animoca. So like, I think like realistically, I don't see a world where Mochaverse token is below the market cap of Grapecoin, right? It just doesn't make any sense to me that that would happen. I think the big question will be the degree to which the market treats $Mocha. Is that the Animoca brand's token? Is it? Or is it just a token related to this NFT project? The big question, the big thing you should be looking for is the degree to which the narrative is that Mocha, $Mocha is the Animoca brand's token. If it is the Animoca brand's token, this has a very large market cap.
If it does, let's assume that it does, what would you expect that market cap to look like? If you had to just give a rough estimate, fully diluted.
I mean, I think like, so like when you do the pricing for like, what do you expect coin market caps to be? There's really like two main things that matter. Thing the first, is it listed on exchange and which exchange? There are two exchanges that are orders of magnitude better than everyone else, right? It goes Binance, Coinbase, OKX, Bybit, like all these others down here. Like, you got to think. Animoca Brands, based in Hong Kong, right? Like, this is a group that has access to Binance. I would be shocked if it's not Binance listed. Thing the second, market maker. Is it a tier one market maker? Is it a market maker really doing their thing, right? We've seen the biggest wins in NFTs, like ApeCoin, like Blur, are both market made by Wintermute, right? Like there is the same market maker for both of those. I think it's very likely that there will be good market making. Good market making listed on Binance, very hard to have under a billion FTV.
That's the Binance Mafia, as Beanie coined it. And, you know, you look at the meme land results. There you go, Clemente.
And so the way you were looking at Mochaverse, or basically any collection that's launching a token, would be, you said 20%. You're like 20% of the overall fully diluted market cap would be like how you would try to value something. If
usually
I remember
correctly. That's what goes to NFTs. 20% goes to NFTs. Now, you also have to think, like, the NFT, when it gets the airdrop, doesn't go to zero, right, usually. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, but, like, usually it doesn't go to zero, so then there's a question of what is the net expected value, right? Also, sometimes we saw, a la, like, the meme land, there's access to a private sale, there's some other things around it, right? And, like, we're talking FTV, it depends on circulating supply, like, maybe they do 10%. You never know, right? You can't do good math on this stuff.
Signal, please.
Spence, I was going to say, like, I like your narrative of saying, like, will the market perceive this as the Animoca token that unites everything? What they were talking about with growth, culture, and governance. But I was also thinking as well, doesn't that sort of backfire on them in that it is more interesting to have separate projects and separate tokens and essentially potentially make more money for the company than to have this one unifying token that embodies the entire ecosystem. That was something that I was thinking about, because it would go against, they would be better off if they had more tokens in the market.
Well, yeah. So the Animoca token is in like all of their projects will only ever use this token. And it won't, like, they, all of their products will still launch their own native tokens. That's just like how this model works for how investment and everything else works, right? But like, I think really where you might look at this is something like how many Animoca Brands games are built on Polygon? How many are built on Arbitrum? How many, like the amount of value that Animoca Brands games have driven to other chains is probably really substantial, right? And if you're sitting there as Animoca Brands, you're thinking, okay, Animoca Brands is a multi-billion dollar company. Right? Like they have literally billions of dollars of crypto on their balance sheet. Totally nuts to think about that. Like, how do you make a big enough splash that the returns are meaningful? Is to try and value capture the externality of creating things on other chains or on other ecosystems. So I wouldn't be shocked if the Mochaverse token is some sort of level of abstraction higher than a native protocol token, right? Like a game may have a token to in-game currency, but like, we've already seen stuff with like Mocha ID around these Mochaverse characters. Like Mocha ID is a universal, like single sign in across Animoca brands, right? Like that very low hanging fruit, very simple, like thing they've done. And that was related to the Mochas. The NFTs got first access to that single sign in concept, right? So I don't think it's actually a huge stretch to say, hey, maybe this becomes a chain on which these others are built, right? And like one of the things that, okay. talked about L2s last time. There's a great supercut on Twitter of like the conversation around that. The fight for which L2 wins, the fight for which L1 wins, is the ability for you to claim an ecosystem, right? Putting together an ecosystem is tough. There are not a lot of players in the space that can rally a bunch of different protocols, games, exchanges, everything into one area to make an ecosystem. One of the groups that has access to the resources and the people and the projects to do that is Animoca Brands. Is that what this is? I don't know, right? Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that's what this is, but I think if I'm sitting in their seat, I would really, really want this to be that, because the emergent value, that's how you have like the target on everybody's head right now is Arbitrum, is Optimism, is like, it is the $10 billion to $20 billion. Like the leaders right now are like 10 to 12 billion on the L2 like ecosystem market, right? The leaders in the L1 ecosystem market is like, say, is Solana outside of Ethereum, right? The winning the L2 market today is a $12 billion outcome. I think if you win and it's clear you've won, that's a $20 to $40 billion outcome, right? Winning the L1 market today as Solana is like a $40 billion outcome. If you win, if you can be competitive with them, that's at least a $20 to $40 billion outcome, right? Like, these are outcomes on an order of magnitude that is so much more substantially larger than any single project. Like, I don't see like a world where a single project token hits $40 billion. I just don't, right?
At least not in the near future.
You could say, oh, like you know, Doge hit $100 billion last. There's all these things you can say that, like, oh, it could happen, but it's really, really tough. Ecosystems are the only thing that can hit that size, and the claim to be an ecosystem is a loose claim, right? Like, you even see stuff like you don't need that much. You need like one really good thing on your chain, two in your golden, right? You saw this with Ronin, right? Ronin had literally one thing on it for a really long time. It just was the one thing it had was really good. Right, which was Axie Infinity. They then had a second thing. I'm blanking on the name of the second, but there's a second project that's really big on Ronin.
It's getting traction. Yeah, I forget what it's called too.
2 points make a line. You have an ecosystem, right? So like in crypto, the barrier to ecosystems isn't that high, but ecosystem development is the name of the game for this cycle. How can you prove that you have an ecosystem that people are building within? Really, only Ethereum and kind of Solana had that last cycle. Now, Bitcoin even has it, right? Like, this is the opening, the floodgates of ecosystem have opened, and we have seen this massive influx in people trying to create ecosystem.
Well, there you go. And I appreciate that breakdown. That was a fantastic breakdown. We'll be able to clip that for sure. Last thing before we let you go and before we wrap the show, your fund is crypto native. You buy crypto assets, whether they are fungible tokens or non-fungible tokens. And you do other, you know, kind of technical crypto approaches to generating yield. Do you care about crypto equities at all?
Like publicly listed?
Yeah, like literally crypto equities, like, yeah, publicly traded companies, Coinbase, MicroStrategy, you know, Bitcoin ETF.
We don't trade publicly traded things in our fund. I will say I personally in my Roth IRA will trade crypto equities.
Okay. What do you like?
I think Coinbase is just the obvious one, right? Like you got to look and say, okay, every single one of these ETFs custodies on Coinbase. So like,
what if somebody said to you that buying the ETF is a better way to get direct exposure to Bitcoin than Coinbase? What is your response?
Yes, I agree. Like, if you want just direct exposure to Bitcoin, buy the Bitcoin ETF. That's the closest you're going to get to buying Bitcoin. If you want something that might be a levered play on Bitcoin, maybe Coinbase is better, right? Like, Coinbase, for a very long period of time, in at least the private markets, the stock significantly outperformed Bitcoin.
Yep. Well, now that we have the ETFs, I'm imagining that a lot of people maybe even sold Coinbase because they were trying to get this as a proxy to the crypto market. That said, and so now it's going to trade heavily on its fundamentals and expectations of the overall crypto market. One thing that is nice about it, you can get a pretty accurate expectation, I'm assuming, of what their earnings are going to be just by looking at the daily volume of crypto and having, you know, Coinbase's percentage, whatever it may be. So that's something that's nice. If you're someone who's trading this, you can make accurate predictions. But yeah, I would guess that a lot of people sold this off in order to just buy into the ETF. I still have Coinbase, but I also have ETFs. I like the idea of the Roth account having a significant holding of crypto at the moment. There's other stocks as well. Some, I mean, this recent dip killed or like really impacted a lot of them, including PO's Bitcoin mining stocks got hit as well. And I think there's an opportunity potentially on those fronts. I also sometimes wonder, I'm like, how exposed is too much to the crypto space?
Nick, the only risk is being underexposed.
Okay. Well, I mean, look, Nick, I know exactly what you mean, but it's also just like, you know, what if, like, how overexposed could you have been to FANG companies, you know, during their decade-long run?
Well, I completely agree. And that was a huge opportunity. And still some of those, I think, are interesting. But yeah, I mean, like, Apple's at a pretty high valuation at this point.
Oh, it's over. Now it's basically over. I mean, obviously these things are still going to perform in my mind, but if you read, like, you know, Rom's tweets and the way he's analyzing this stuff, Microsoft seems to be the one that could still run. And
Microsoft
now
does really well. It's at a fair valuation. There's some other stocks. He was talking about one the other day, Dave, which I know a lot about because I had been building a product in that space. And so I'm familiar with how these companies are valued. That one on a like book value is crazy low. But then I went and looked at a comparable company and it's actually more expensive than those. So it just happens that the market doesn't value certain companies, whereas they value others. That's one thing that is weird about this. Just like the stock market is similar in some ways to literally the crypto market, where valuations have nothing to do with like
fundamentals,
they're instead just associated with general trends in the market that people are saying, hey, I think that electric vehicles are a cool trend that's coming out. I think AI is a cool trend that's coming out. And suddenly all those stocks pump up an insane level. I was looking
for no reason.
Twilio yesterday, I was looking at their stock. It's insanely low valued relative to the amount of cash that they have literally on their books, like in terms of liquid capital that they have available. And also, like, if you subtract liabilities out of that as well, it's still pretty cheap. Then I talked to other people and like, this company is run like shit. I don't know what you like, whether or not you trade the fundamentals or you trade whether or not the market thinks that this company is run like shit. And what like the impact of those things are in this particular market. We love, obviously, the Bitcoin ETFs, and I love it from a retirement fund standpoint because it gives me exposure to something that, when else am I going to get a 5X in my retirement fund, basically? Like, other than 2021's like insane stock market trading moment, 2020, 2021, that whole time, that was
huge. Can I say something here too? Because I think we're making a base assumption that may not be correct. If you're a degen and you're listening to this and you have earned income, open a Roth IRA, contribute the max amount to your Roth IRA. Do not wait. This is the easiest money glitch in all of US accounting, period. Open it. You can, if you want to hold Bitcoin, hold it in your Roth.
Yeah.
Don't wait.
$6,000 a year.
Just do it.
Backdoor Roth is your other option. You have limitations on how much earnings you have.
But that's the Peter Thiel special right there, backdoor Roth.
You can literally call up Schwab and say, just give me a backdoor Roth. And you actually have until April 15th to do it for last year.
Yeah. And I will tell you too, I've experienced this. I thought I couldn't contribute to my Roth because of my crypto gains a few years ago. And I called up Fidelity and they will walk you through how to set up a backdoor Roth. You make a normal IRA and you convert it to a Roth. It's super simple. It's all above board. In addition, you want to get real fancy. This is where the comes in. There's something called a synthetic Roth too. And so you can do a Roth through your own life insurance policy that you can borrow against. But that one is complicated.
Our boy Rom gave us that one at dinner. He loves that one. Loves it.
TikTokers that love that thing as well, where they're like, and this is how the rich stay rich and don't pay capital gain tax. Some of those involve whole life insurance policies, though, which I'm generally like, that's great when you have a fuck ton of money, basically, like if you just have a small amount. The problem is those whole life policies don't generally yield like a great return. But if you have a ton of money, then it is very interesting. There's stuff you can do with trust and other stuff to actually do tax optimization. The last one I was going to say on that Roth category, I brought it up on the show before, is the mega backdoor Roth, which which is up to some like $40,000 per year. But the only way you can do that, I believe, is if you're like company's 401k plan enables. And I looked to see if ours does, because I was like really curious.
About the mega backdoor this thing.
About the mega backdoor this shit. You know what I'm saying, dude. You know what I'm saying. And so I'm going to just roll that 40 grand in tax-free gains and throw that into a Bitcoin ETF, you know? And
makes sense.
And toss another Bitcoin in my portfolio. You know, that's just that's my thoughts.
No, I like it. Real quick closing thought on this. Your boy, I follow Gergovin. Gergovin posts some good shit. He's a huge PayPal bull. So I think he got pretty disappointed by the PayPal announcement. The PayPal CEO said that he was going to shock the world. And that was
hilarious, dude.
It was basically an NFT type announcement. He said he was going to shock the world on a date. And what he was shocking the world about was 1% cash back through PayPal. And everyone's like, yo, what? And the chart literally looks like a crypto. Like, look at that. Like, this is fun. That's fun. So sorry to anybody that owned PayPal, including Gergovin. Gergovin probably wasn't expecting that one, because he was tweeting about adding to PayPal ahead of this world shocking announcement.
That was so obvious it was going to disappoint, because he went on CNBC. And they were basically trying to pull it out of him, like what the thing was. I saw some clip, and I can't say any of this stuff that we're working on, but you know, let's just say we're diving deep into AI. And he felt like someone. So if you look at if I remember, I'd sold a business over a decade ago to this company in New York, and I remember chatting with like the team there, and I remember chatting with other people at private, like sort of smaller market cap public company conversations. And you see during these trends a race for press releases around the sort of theme that's going on. Like, remember all these companies that jumped into metaverse all of a sudden during the NFT time, so that like their market cap will jump up by 3x, 4x, 5x as a result of those press releases. It felt like he was trying to do the same thing and now recategorize PayPal as an AI company.
Like a year later than he should have. It's like, what? There was so many tweets about this, like where it was just like somebody talked to this CEO, tell him to just stop saying weird stuff. But anyway, what I was going to bring up is Tesla getting wrecked. Tesla getting just bought
a bunch of it.
Thank God. I think I talked about it on the show. I reduced my position from 80K to 20K as this thing's going down. Thank God. Holy shit. It's not every day that you get like out of something right before disaster strikes. I'm assuming my 20K, I haven't checked it. I'm assuming the 20K is more like 14K now. Things have been getting wrecked over the past whatever.
They had shitty earnings, basically.
Shitty earnings four times in a row.
The Cybertruck? Was it the Cybertruck that just let it go off a cliff?
There's a bunch of negative macro influences on the EV market.
Yep.
There was like, you had a bunch of negative stories coming out from like Hertz saying that they're dumping all of their EV.
That seemed like a good chance. If you wanted to buy a Tesla, I said that also.
I was like, you could also launch an EV rental car company if you really wanted right then.
16 grand for a Tesla with 70,000 miles. I was like, I might just buy one in cash. I mean, well, why not? Like, let's do it.
Tesla being a third of a Bitcoin is crazy.
That's crazy. I mean, he's talked about he wants to make it cheaper and cheaper. Elon wants the Tesla to make it cheaper and cheaper, which, by the way, is the way it's supposed to work. If you're on a sound money standard, the price of goods is actually supposed to go down. We're not on a sound money standard. But regardless, the price of goods is supposed to go down, not up. You're not supposed to pay more for an avocado. You're supposed to use technology to make it easier to grow avocados and thus make it cheaper. But anyway, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to make it lower, cheaper. Gergovin wants another 20%. Move to the downside on Tesla. My friend, who's a big time Tesla bull, I don't think you'd want me to say who he is. He's got millions of dollars of Tesla stock, said that he's starting to accumulate under 180 again carefully. and he'll get aggressive under $150. I like it. I like it. It ain't going to die. And I'm down under $150. But this has been a gnarly, call it 15 months for Tesla. And thank God I reduced that 80K position to 20K, which is probably now 15 or 14K. Woo! That was crazy. Don't take car advice from Tesla fanboys. Thank you, Abro. Well, anyway,
they are an AI company is the big thing. Although the autopilot has kind of been like stuck at the level that it's at. I've also I was driving with autopilot on when I rented the Tesla the other day. It is interesting. It was running into a lot of issues. I ran
not perfect
into a
yet.
Wall, you know, and a passenger was injured in the process. So I mean, you know.
Not great. Electric car company, AI company, probably a future insurance company because nobody has data that can compete with them, you know, paired with the AI. A battery company, right? Renewable energy company, a lot going on there. A lot going on. Just flat out technology company, probably software company too, but rough time right now and probably more room to go down. This is a great tweet by Kix right here. Yeah, and we'll wrap on this one, ladies and gentlemen. Kix posted the Abercrombie chart. You know, look at that piss missile to the upside. He goes, did Abercrombie pivot into AI when I wasn't paying attention? Very funny stuff, Spencer.
Well, I actually have one question, and I'm going to bring the show full circle. So you started the show with the Bodago of the Day. Is that a new segment that you guys are doing? Like, what's up with that?
Yeah, we're doing it every day.
Did we mention the guy that DM'd me the other day? He said he swept 10. Can you give me a shout out on the show?
Him one. Yeah, well, if you sweep 10 Bodagos, you can be Bodago of the Day. Absolutely. This just fell through the cracks. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to tell you guys something. Nick's my co-founder. I work with Nick excessively. Love working with Nick. DMing Nick is not the way to get anything done.
Okay, wow. I do DM with people. Stop flooding me with nude pics, people. That's getting out of control. But the Robbie 000 JR. Well,
we'll give him a proper one.
We'll give him a proper one, but I just want to do an end of show. Shout out to Robbie, dude. I got your DM, Robbie 000 on Twitter. Clemente, you know, do the work here, dude. Like, do the work. You should have, I can't believe you didn't even cover that you weren't on top of this guy sweeping it. Shout out to the sweepers. All of you are just guaranteed shout out on this show. If you sweep it, you're going to get a shout out on this show.
Just don't DM Nick. DM Clemente. DM
me. I follow, dude, the guy DM me a day or two ago. Like, it's not that
day or two or three. Day or two or three.
It was three. Okay.
But no, guys, it's a good thing that Nick's DMs don't it's a good thing. It's because Nick's laser focused on shit. Nick called me this morning with a revelation at 8:30 a.m. Love to hear it. And Spencer, I want to tell you one thing before we wrap. But Bunny at Jahanry's. Bunny, what's going on?
It's kind of messed up that Spencer owns a bajillion Bodagos. Never been Bodago of the Day.
I mean, Bunny's not wrong. Why haven't we made Spencer Bodago of the Day?
If you sweep 10, you get it. He swept 100 million. He owns half the collection now.
He's frozen, right?
He's definitely frozen.
Okay, I was going to say, because that would be I was like, yo, this guy's like a monk. This dude's literally like a Shaolin monk with that level of stoicism. Spencer, can you hear anything we're saying right now? Because you're frozen.
Yeah, I'm on the phone. My internet's being weird on the computer. So I got you guys here.
Okay, all right. Well, you were frozen. I was like, yo, this guy's evolved the way that he's staying still like that. That was some Buddha stuff. And Mike DeFi weighed in and said, dude's pissed he isn't Bodago of the Day. Literally giving us the stone face.
What the fuck, P.O.? P.O., you know what, Nick? I feel underappreciated. Not only am I not Bodago of the Day today, I've never been Bodago of the Day. You know what? Maybe I'll just have to buy a couple more so that I can be as cool as the person who swept 10 yesterday or 3 days ago and got lost in Nick's DMs. Maybe then I'll get some goddamn respect around here.
Well,
until then, you know, I got to head out, guys. But it's been a lovely show. I love several of you, not all. But I hope those listening are more interesting than those on stage, because that will make a better world for all of us. So,
there we go. I love it. A nice little like a Friar's roast right there on the way out. Spencer, we have some cool stuff with Bodogos coming out that I'm excited to show you behind the scenes and publicly, which I think you're going to find very cool. But great having you on the show, buddy. I'll have Clemente reach out to book you for the next one. Ladies and gentlemen, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time, we do this show. Have been doing it for over 2 years. Clemente, how many episodes are we at?
468. Sorry, 600. I don't know.
What?
Bro, are you just throwing 658 out? Episodes. 658
episodes. 658 episodes, ladies and gentlemen, I think. I mean, I'm not getting a ton of...
number. Are you just counting the number of YouTube videos?
No. We did some backdoor research, actually, to establish the number.
Backdoor, aka we looked at, we counted them. I had the admin count it, Nick. But anyway, 658 episodes of the show.
There's actually probably more because you missed, there's Twitter ones. They didn't used to let you record Twitter spaces, basically. So I feel like
we couldn't take those into account. Those are lost forever. Literal lost recordings of the show from the early days.
No, they're not, because those were my original tweets. Or if you go back on my profile, I have all, it's like a minutes meeting. Like I was taking minutes. So okay. Actually, I think if you actually looked at my Twitter, you'd be able to get the real numbers.
Well, you also can just look at a calendar, because we did it 5 days a week. We know that there were two that we missed, basically. And so Clemente, this is basic ass math, just in case you're wondering. Like it literally is just look at the calendar and run the numbers based on that. Like that, it really is that simple.
I mean, you could probably just use an app and type in, count the number of business days from like, you know, September 15th, 2021 till now. And that's literally how many shows there have been. But yeah. Anyway, what was I going to say? Leo said, bro can't count. Very appropriate comment. And Swine Flu pointing out that we've been doing this before Clemente was born. He is very young. Anyway, the show is available on Apple and Spotify podcast, ladies and gentlemen, for people that want to listen to the show outside of the Twitter bubble or share it with friends or listen to it on the go at 1.25, 1.5x speed. That's how I listen to my podcast. It's quite frankly necessary for podcasts that people aren't from the East Coast. If they're just like West Coasters, speaking a little bit slower, I got to speed them up. So there you go. Anyway, yeah, Lex Friedman, that's pretty funny. Ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you listening to this show without commercial interruption.
Let's end.
We're going to end the show anyway. It's also on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube and check out the show on Monday, because we'll be back. Thanks for listening, everyone. Going to have some cool stuff coming out in the Bodogos world.